Ender began calling the rest of the army through the gate. It was going to get crowded on the top of that star, but there was no choice. As it turned out, Ender's plan was to use another of Bean's stupid ideas, which he had watched Bean practice with his tune. A screen formation of frozen soldiers, controlled by Bean's tune, who remained unfrozen behind them. Having once told Bean what he wanted him to do, Ender joined the formation as a common soldier and left everything up to Bean to organize. "It's your show," he said. Bean had never expected Ender to do any such thing, but it made a kind of sense. What Ender wanted was not to have this battle. Allowing himself to be part of a screen of frozen soldiers, pushed through the battle by someone else, was as close to sleeping through it as he could get. Bean set to work at once, constructing the screen in four parts consisting of one tune each. Each of tunes A through C lined up four and three, arms interlocked with the men beside them, the upper row of three with toes hooked under the arms of the four soldiers below. When everybody was clamped down tight, Bean and his tune froze them. Then each of Bean's men took hold of one section of the screen and, careful to move very slowly so that inertia would not carry the screen out of their control, they maneuvered them out from above the star and slowly moved them down until they were just under it. Then they joined them back together into a single screen, with Bean's squad forming the interlock. "When did you guys practice this?" asked Dumper, the leader of E-Tune.
"We've never done this before," Bean answered truthfully. "We've done bursting and linking with one-man screens, but seven men each? It's all new to us."
Dumper laughed. "And there's Ender, plugged into the screen like anybody." "That's trust, Bean, old boy."
"That's despair," thought Bean.
But he didn't feel the need to say that aloud. When all was ready, E-Tune got into place behind the screen, and on Bean's command, pushed off as hard as they could. The screen drifted down toward the enemy's gate at a pretty good clip. Enemy fire, though it was intense, hit only the already frozen soldiers in front. E-Tune and Bean's squad kept moving very slightly, but enough that no stray shot could freeze them. And they managed to do some return fire, taking out a few of the enemy soldiers and forcing them to stay behind cover. When Bean figured they were as far as they could get before Griffin or Tiger launched an attack, he gave the word and his squad burst apart, causing the four sections of the screen also to separate and angle slightly so they were drifting now toward the corners of the stars where Griffin and Tiger were gathered. E-Tune went with the screens, firing like crazy, trying to make up for their tiny numbers. After a count of three, the four members of Bean's squad who had gone with each screen pushed off again, this time angling to the middle and downward, so that they rejoined Bean and Ducheval, with momentum carrying them straight toward the enemy gate. They held their bodies rigid, not firing a shot, and it worked. They were all small. They were clearly drifting, not moving with any particular purpose. The enemy took them for frozen soldiers if they were noticed at all. A few were partially disabled with stray shots, but even when under fire they never moved, and the enemy soon ignored them. When they got to the enemy gate, Bean slowly, wordlessly, got four of them with their helmets in place at the corners of the gate. They pressed, just as in the end-of-game ritual, and Bean gave Ducheval a push, sending him through the gate as Bean drifted upward again. The lights in the battle room went on. The weapons all went dead. The battle was over. It took a few moments before Griffin and Tiger realized what had happened. Dragon only had a few soldiers who weren't frozen or disabled, while Griffin and Tiger were mostly unscathed, having played conservative strategies. Bean knew that if either of them had been aggressive, Ender's strategy wouldn't have worked. But having seen Bean fly around the star, doing the impossible, and then watching this weird screen approach so slowly, they were intimidated into inaction. Ender's legend was such that they dared not commit their forces for fear of falling into a trap. Only, that was the trap. Major Anderson came into the room through the teacher gate. "Ender," he called. Ender was frozen. He could only answer by grunting loudly through clenched jaws.
That was a sound that victorious commanders rarely had to make. Anderson, using the hook, drifted over to Ender and thawed him. Bean was half the battle room away, but he heard Ender's words, so clear was his speech, so silent was the rune. "I beat you again, sir." Bean's squad members glanced at him, obviously wondering if he was resentful at Ender for claiming credit for a victory that was engineered and executed entirely by Bean. But Bean understood what Ender was saying. He wasn't talking about the victory over Griffin and Tiger armies. He was talking about a victory over the teachers. And that victory was the decision to turn the army over to Bean and sit it out himself. If they thought they were putting Ender to the ultimate test, making him fight two armies right after a personal fight for survival in the bathroom, he beat them. He sidestepped the test. Anderson knew what Ender was saying, too. "Nonsense, Ender," said Anderson. He spoke softly, but the room was so silent that his words, too, could be heard. "Your battle was with Griffin and Tiger." "How stupid do you think I am?" said Ender. "Damn right," said Bean silently. Anderson spoke to the group at large. "After that little maneuver, the rules are being revised to require that all of the enemy's soldiers must be frozen or disabled before the gate can be reversed." "Rules?" murmured Ducheval as he came back through the gate. Bean grinned at him. "It could only work once anyway," said Ender. Anderson handed the hook to Ender. Instead of thawing his soldiers one at a time and only then thawing the enemy, Ender entered the command to thaw everyone at once, then handed the hook back to Anderson, who took it and drifted away toward the center, where the end-of-game rituals usually took place. "Hey!" Ender shouted. "What is it next time? My army in a cage without guns, with the rest of the battle school against them? How about a little equality?" So many soldiers murmured their agreement that the sound of it was loud, and not all came from Dragon Army. But Anderson seemed to pay no attention. It was William B. of Griffin Army who said what almost everyone was thinking. "Ender, if you're on one side of the battle, it won't be equal no matter what the conditions are." The armies vocally agreed, many of the soldiers laughing, and Talo Momo, not to be outclassed by B, started clapping his hands rhythmically. "Ender Wiggin," he shouted. Other boys took up the chant. But Bean knew the truth. Knew, in fact, what Ender knew. That no matter how good a commander was, no matter how resourceful, no matter how well prepared his army, no matter how excellent his lieutenants, no matter how courageous and spirited the fight, victory almost always went to the side with the greater power to inflict damage. Sometimes David kills Goliath, and people never forget. But there were a lot of little guys Goliath had already mashed into the ground. Nobody sang songs about those fights because they knew that was the likely outcome. No, that was the inevitable outcome, except for the miracles.